We are blessed with two gospel readings today. Of course, we have what is called the processional gospel read in the narthex by Monica from Mark 11. This is one of the few texts in the narrative lectionary that is a bit out of chronological order. To honor the day of their church year, we go back to chapter 11. If you remember the last several weeks, the text, Jesus is already in Jerusalem. So this is a flashback. But it's important. It's important to revisit this text, to think about what is happening as Jesus comes into Jerusalem, knowing he comes to his death. It's a fantastic scene. There are those who have been with Jesus all along, those who have gathered around him as his ministry has kind of picked up steam and snowballed a bit. Now he gets to Jerusalem and we hear there is a crowd. And it's a crowd who seeks to honor him. And we know they do so with cloaks, with branches. We say they are branches of palms. And so we raise our palms in praise today. But they do indeed praise him. They put out the cloaks on the road. They spread the branches before him. Most importantly, perhaps, they shout, "Hosanna!" An Aramaic word meaning "save us." And they name him King of the lineage of David. Surely this is the Messiah. And there's some hints in this text that Jesus perhaps had some of the words of the prophet Zechariah in what he was doing. First, you have this near the Mount of Olives. In Zechariah, the prophecy is that God would one day appear on the Mount of Olives and lead the people to victory. So here, in a way, Jesus is claiming that as he is God, the Mount of Olives still figures in God's plan. Something is going to happen where God will be victorious. Then there's all this business about the colt or the donkey or the foal, depending on which of the Gospels you read. There's one, maybe two. In Mark's Gospel, we have the one. Someone had pointed out there's an awful lot of ink spilled over this donkey story, this colt, especially in the Gospel of Mark, where we know it's such a lean writing, it's such a short Gospel. Why all these details about this colt? It's a rather odd scene. Jesus says, "Go, do these things. If this happens," I can see him almost winking because, of course, it does go down exactly the way he predicted. "Just say the Lord needs it." And the interesting thing with that word "Lord" in the Greek, it could be translated as we have in our RSV, "Lord," as we're used to calling Jesus, right? Jesus is Lord. But it could also mean master or owner, which is interesting also. If Jesus is using the word in that way, he is claiming to be God by virtue of owning all that is in creation. The back and forth, the colt is brought to Jesus. Jesus rides on the colt. Another throwback to the prophet Zechariah, foretelling that the Messiah would come riding on a donkey. So the crowds raise their branches, raise their voices. "Lord, save us. Messiah, save us." He enters Jerusalem, goes to the temple. As I suggested, we know in the intervening chapters, there's a back and forth with some of the religious leaders, but not quite yet. Here we have, I think, almost a comedic, anticlimactic moment after this great entry into Jerusalem. He looked around and then left. Kind of like a tourist after a long trip. "I'll get to the sights tomorrow. It's a bit much today." So Jesus enters into Jerusalem. We're mindful, too, that is the time of the gathering of folks from near and far for the celebration of the Passover. the Jewish festival where they remember the Exodus event, God freeing the people from slavery in Egypt, leading them through the Red Sea. Things are at a bit of a fever pitch. Jesus' entry into Jerusalem seems to be tapping into that a bit. It is a bold statement to come with a crowd in the midst of a busy city that is under the occupation of the empire. Surely Jesus is drawing all kinds of attention. All right, so he enters Jerusalem. We know that the intervening chapters, there's some back and forth again. There's some disputes. There's words levied back and forth. And then we jumped to chapter 14. And I apologize, in the bulletin I left it a couple weeks ago, Mark 12. No, this is chapter 14, verses 3 through 9. That's our text today. A more intimate scene. Now we are in a house, specifically the house of Simon the leper, which is significant. Perhaps this was Simon the former leper, who still goes by the moniker the leper. But this is someone that the religious authorities, the well-off, those who are, know what's what, would avoid, stay away from. Here, even in the last days of Jesus' life, Jesus is still crossing boundaries. Jesus is still numbering himself with those on the fringes, the margins of society. Jesus' mission is not to honor the well-etched boundaries that people have drawn over the years. It is instead to be a part of community, to love one another, and to let people indeed know who he is and who we are as those who praise his name. Well, a woman comes in. We're not sure exactly who this is. Was this somebody in the household? Was this somebody that decided to crash the party? But she comes in with an alabaster jar, very costly ointment of nard, we are told. This past week at our midweek, we were talking about words that are fun to pronounce. Right? I said dollop is one of my favorites. I think nard has to be another one, right? Spikenard, a very expensive process to extract an ointment from the nard, we think as far off as India. Indeed, she comes in and she anoints Jesus' head with this ointment. If you imagine the fragrance just permeating not only the room, perhaps the whole household. She does this to honor who Jesus is in her understanding of what he has come to do. Now the men in the room get a bit indignant. Why was this ointment wasted in this way? What a harsh word, wasted. Did she waste this ointment? It's pointed out how much the ointment would have cost her. We think a denarii is one day's day labor wages. So it's almost a year's worth of day labor wages broken open and spread on Jesus' head. And they scold her. But Jesus steps to her defense. She reminds them who he is again. He suggests that perhaps she is in on something that they have grown a bit callous to or have rejected in his words about his ministry and his identity. Let her alone. Why do you trouble her? She has performed a good service or a good work, a faithful work, a work coming from within the heart in love, a bit reckless perhaps, Perhaps we're reminded of the story of the widow in the temple who gives all that she has. Here, this woman gives a great, lavish, unconditional gift to Jesus. Jesus seems to expose the men's reaction to this. Huh, we could have given that money to the poor. I think what Jesus does is expose that for some kind of elevated sense of piety. Jesus reminds them, you can help the poor whenever you want. As if to say, how much do you really help the poor? She has done a great thing. And then comes perhaps the shocker to them once again, although it shouldn't be a shocker, they've heard this several times. Jesus says, in what she has done, she has anointed my body beforehand for its burial. Even this lavish gift, this lavish act of love, the shadow of the cross falls upon even it. Truly, I tell you, wherever the gospel is proclaimed, we will remember this act, Jesus says. But I love that reminder of how far the gospel will go. Wherever the good news is proclaimed in the whole world, Jesus has big hopes for this message of love, for this understanding of who Jesus is and what Jesus did as the Messiah. This will be told, and we will remember her. This rather intimate story comes in the midst, again, of the broiling fever that is going on outside. Right before this, we hear that the religious leaders were plotting to kill Jesus. They were hesitant because of the crowds, fearing they would cause a riot. This brings us to verse 9. Verse 10, we hear Judas goes off to betray Jesus. So in the midst of these two scenes of opposition of those out to get Jesus, we have this scene of lavish love that this unnamed disciple showers upon Jesus. I think this says two things to us, perhaps many more, but at least these two. One is to note the reaction of the disciples to the woman. They are questioning why she has done what she has done, indeed with her own possession. Who are they to declare how she should use what she has? I think there are a lot of times where we feel like we wish to critique someone else's act of piety. That is, how someone else lives out their faith. We are often very full of ideas on how others should do that. I think this text asks us to remember that when we are judging, because there are times to challenge others, but to ask, what are our motivations? Why are we questioning others' piety? Why are we questioning why and how people go about their expression of faith? What does that stem from in us? Perhaps we think of the text, you know, before we mention the splinter in someone else's eye, we need to take the log out of our own. Are we trying to cover up something in us that is at unrest? Then there's the whole action that the woman takes with this lavish act of love. I think this invites us to ask, who do we say that Jesus is? That's been the question that Mark has been asking all along and trying to answer in many and different ways. Are we lavish in our love, not just for one another, not just for those who are in need, but for Jesus himself? Right? And that's the point that he's making. There's his bodily presence, his life here on earth was a wondrous, a splendid, a unique time in the history of the world. And that's why he lifts up what she has done. She recognizes that, perhaps. I mean, look at our calendar, right? There's before Jesus and there's after Jesus. It's pretty, you know, it was unique and special. And she recognizes that. I don't know, though, whether she understands that she has anointed him for burial until he reminds everyone that he is to die. I like to think in a way she didn't know. And instead, what she did in this lavish act of love was to connect with Jesus at the very heart of his expression of lavish love, which would be, of course, the cross. And that gives me confidence, even in my bumbling about and my perhaps misfired attempts to do good, to honor Jesus, maybe every now and then I will tap into the right thing, even if I don't realize it at first. I think with this woman, we are invited to do a good service, perform a good work, to show a kindness, and to trust that when we do so, we are tapping into Jesus' very ministry. This ministry of healing, this ministry of inclusion, this ministry ultimately that would give all for the sake of the world. So this is Palm Sunday, the first day of this Holy Week observance. We will go on from here. Thursday we will hear the Last Supper, and we will read the Passion of Jesus, the story of his arrest, his torture, and his death. We do so understanding that this is the Messiah. This is the Son of David. This is the King of Kings. This is the one that would give all for us.